league kind of realized that, you know, we're in an era now where these fans, they're starting to have a voice.
In this week's Know Them From Adam podcast, a very special guest, the former 49ers, Cowboys, Eagles, Bills, Bengals, Seahawks, wide receiver, Terrell Owens, who touches on a number of topics, talks about the fact that he'd be interested in returning to play in the NFL this season, talks about the advice that he gave to Odell Beckham Jr. last season, and talked about the upcoming NFL season and why he believes Dallas is better suited to have a bigger season than Philadelphia, his two former teams. Without further ado, Terrell Owens. T.O.
What's happening, Adam?
Thank you very much for joining us in this podcast. I do appreciate it tremendously.
Oh, not a problem. I'm looking forward to making my second appearance.
When was the first?
No, I said after this, I'm looking forward to my second.
Well, you have an open invitation to come back onto the podcast anytime you want. And I will say this, we've had this discussion. What happens in the week where you don't have a guest and somebody doesn't show up or stands you up? Like, what do you do? So if you want to be my stand-in guest, I am making a standing offer to you.
Let's make it happen.
You are our stand-in guest from this point on moving forward. But I digress. We will start here right now. And I want to ask you, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, with all the following that you have, what is T.O. up to these days?
Right now, man, just being being a father to my kids, man, it's something that, again, like I said, I didn't really experience, you know, growing up. I was raised by my grandmother and my mom. So, you know, now that I have kids, man, it's just been a joy just to be around my kids and see them grow up and just really just be a part of their lives. And so, you know, other than that, man, I took my 17-year-old to game 5 of the finals.
Wow.
You know how 17-year-olds are. You know, he tries to be cool and calm and collective. But he was enjoying the game. He's a Cavaliers fan, so it wasn't too much fun, but I got a chance to really get back there in the back. I had an all-access pass, so he got a chance to meet, you know, Kevin Durant, got a
wow.
picture with him, got to meet Draymond and Steph Curry and a lot of the guys. And that's about it. Outside work on my clothing line.
Yep.
Prototype81.com is where you can find it. It's men and women clothing to and from the gym. It's a mixture of fabrications. It's just not, I know a lot of people see me as this guy that's fit and, you know, all these things, my muscles, but I'm a fashionable guy at the same time. So with my handsome good looks and, you know, me being involved with, health and wellness and fitness, then, you know, I felt like it made sense to get into that arena. So I'm into fashion.
Is that what gave you that idea?
Yeah, it was. I think a lot of people, again, throughout my career, I mean, obviously the sports, the athletic part kind of speaks for itself. But my mom, what a lot of people don't know, my mom was a seamstress growing up. And really kind of what really wanted me to live out this dream is because everything that I've done since the NFL has afforded me to be on the stage that I have and the money that I've been able to make, she wanted to do a lot of the things that I'm doing now. I mean, I've modeled. I'm now doing a fashion line, which, you know, she wanted to do some of these things when she was younger. But it's tough when you're a young kid, especially for her, you know, having kids, had me at a very, very young age, around like 16 or 17, you know, her dreams got cut short. I've done TV, television, movies, things of that nature. So she's living really proudly through me. So with my clothing line, that this is something that really I'm trying to dedicate to her because I never knew that I had that it was really in my DNA, unbeknownst to me all these years. But I saw her, you know, when I was younger, I saw her make clothing for other people in the neighborhood, in the city, just to make ends meet. So that's what I'm really passionate about right now.
Very cool. So give me that name one more time so people can go online and check it out.
It's prototype81.com.
Great.
And prototype is really, the definition of prototype is the basis of which something is made or formed. So when I came out of college, you know, everybody started saying, and then when I got into the league, everybody started saying that I was prototypical. I had the body, the prototype body of some of the notable guys at that time that were really, really good, tall and rangy. You think about Jake Reed, Herman Moore, J.J. Stokes, you know, the obvious, Jerry Rice, those guys. So that's how I came up with the name.
Now, let me ask you something. You brought up your mother, and you did not grow up with a father, as you alluded to, and yet you're a father today. What has been the best part of fatherhood for you?
Man, I think for me, understanding and realizing that, you know, now the relationship that I have with them, I don't have primary custody, so I don't have them on or see them on an everyday basis or a month-to-month basis, but it's quality over quantity.
Yep.
So I make the time that I have and I spend with them, I make it as enjoyable, and I enjoy it as much as I can. So that's the mindset that I kind of embody when I have my kids around. It's really kind of just embracing the quality time that I have versus the quantity.
Do you feel like when you see your relationship with them and the quality things that you get to do, like going to the NBA Finals, does it remind you of anything that you might have missed on without a father?
Man, just that bond, that relationship, that interaction. Really, like, again, it's just really the bonding of the kids. So, again, that's just establishing of a relationship and having those conversations, talking to them, you know, with my son. You know, I never really, you know, had that birds and bees talk with my dad. So it was for me, when I knew he was getting older, I'm like, man, how am I going to have this conversation with my son? I'm like, I never had it with my dad. So how am I going to go about this situation, you know, not knowing how to really, you know, initiate the conversation? But I prayed about it, and it came off organically. We were just driving in the truck, you know, one day, and we were just conversing about a few things, and one thing kind of led to another, and I just basically just told him, I said, you know, your dad has made some poor choices in his life. You're old enough to understand that now. You're in a situation now. You're growing up. If you feel like you can, I always feel like you can come and talk to me about anything. If you feel uncomfortable talking to your mom about certain things, you know, you have an open line of communication with me. And that's really kind of basically how it went. And so he was like, yes, sir. And so that right there is something that I think I'll never forget, just having that conversation for the very first time and just letting him know, like, yo, you know, you're going to be put in situations. I want you to be careful. I want you to protect yourself. And so, again, I was like, I know you're old enough now to know that I'm your dad. I have other kids, and I don't want you to go down the same path that I've gone down. So learn from dad's mistakes. And so that's one of the things of beauty about, you know, fatherhood and really establishing a relationship with the kids.
Good for you. Do they know you as dad, or what do they know about T.O.? You see what I'm like? Do they have any idea who you were and what you did?
Nah, I mean, I think my son, he knows, but he doesn't. I think he's hesitant to really allow himself to really commit to him knowing that, you know, I was really something special on the football field. But I think I don't really say much about it. I don't really talk about football or anything that I did very much. I think I'm sure he gets a lot from his peers. With the access to the internet, it's a no-brainer. I mean, you know, these kids, I mean, they can find anything out that they want to on the internet. But that's one of the things about, you know, me being who I am and accomplishing a lot of what I accomplished is that I did it, you know, I did it really kind of not knowing what I was doing. I really didn't. I mean, even playing football, I didn't really understand what I was going to become. I never thought I would play level. They'll tell you that I very seldom, I rarely even have any memorabilia in my house, you know, that reflects that I played professional sports or football for that matter. It was just something that I became very competitive with. I mean, we can go play marbles or we can go play hopscotch or something. I mean, I'm going to be very, very competitive. So my kids, they just see me and they just know me as dad. I have a bunch of, you know, my male friends that I play basketball and stuff with, you know, because I consider myself an athlete. I don't just really consider myself a football player. So they'll try to reinforce to him who I am without really me even having to say anything.
Did I hear that right? You don't have any memorabilia at all? You didn't save any of your jerseys, game balls, trophies, anything of that sort?
I have it somewhere. Either my mom or somebody has it, or it's in storage.
Wow.
That's the God honest truth. I just ran across, because I had some stuff in storage in Dallas, and then probably like 2 years ago, I had some of that stuff shipped to L.A., and I went through boxes, and I found my Super Bowl jersey in one of the boxes. So I got it somewhere, but again, like I said, it's not something that I keep out or, you know, as a keepsake or anything like that. And some of the stuff, even my mom has that I don't even know. So it's just stuff that I've accumulated over the course of my career playing. But, you know, I got a number of the balls, some of the touchdown balls that I, you know, that I scored with. I have those in boxes somewhere, but yeah.
I wonder what that would all be worth if you turned that over to some collector to pawn off on eBay or wherever it is that they sell that merchandise. I wonder how much you'd be able to collect.
I don't know. You're probably right. That's a good question.
See, you should have somebody look at it. If you're not going to use it, you should at least consider selling off some of that.
No, I guess. I'll have to run that by my family first. I'm sure they may want it before I just let it go. I mean, they're probably, you know, feel very fond of it more so than I would. But I lived in Miami too, and I just went there, and like I think it may have been June,
yep.
And I went through some boxes, and I saw some of my cleats from when I played with the Cowboys.
Wow!
So it's funny, it just that stuff. It just takes you back down memory lane, you know, a few times. But it's something like with my career. I think what people are probably fascinated or be surprised to know is that I like I alluded to earlier, I never really envisioned or thought I would play beyond the collegiate level. And to have achieved some of the things that I have, you know, like I said, I sit back and I'm like, man, I did some great stuff, and I did it, you know, really kind of unbeknownst to me of what I could do. But I always, number one, I believed in myself and my skill set, and I think that's what really helped me on the football field in terms of my confidence. Because, I mean, I was a kid that really I was you know, I went through self-esteem issues. I got picked on. I got bullied in a sense. I mean, I didn't really know that that's what it was, but, you know, I got picked on. And, you know, some of those things kind of shaped and molded me, you know, my personality, which a lot of people got to see on Sundays.
So when you look back at that career and you've accomplished all the things you have, what is the most meaningful accomplishment from your NFL days?
That's a good question. I think from the standpoint of taking advantage of the opportunities that were given to me, I mean, I just being able to provide for my family, you know, as I alluded to earlier, talking about my mom and what she had to do to make ends meet, you know, working, you know, a number of jobs, you know, her being a seamstress, you know, her making bridesmaids dresses, you know, doing alterations and things of that nature just to kind of make money to put food on the table. You know, that, you know, what I did on the football field was really motivation to give back, you know, for the sacrifice that she made, you know, for my family, my brothers and sisters.
T.O., recently, this offseason, the NFL passed a new rule on relaxed football celebrations. There's nobody that celebrated quite like you. What are your thoughts on these new rules in regards to the relaxed football celebrations in the league?
I think it's a great thing. I think the league kind of realized that, you know, we're in an era now where, you know, fan engagement, you know, these fans, they're starting to have a voice. In a sense. And I think when you talk about where social media has gone and how it's blown up to where everything is mobile, the access that fans want I think, you know, over the years, I think finally the league has done a great job. I think it's really kind of has listened to some of the outside noise, because, again, viewership has gone down. When you talk about, you know, television networks, in terms of the subscriptions and the viewership. So they have to do something to increase or get back in tune with what the fans want. And so football is America, you know, is America's greatest sport, you know, I think outside of basketball. So I think when you add that element of excitement and you start engaging the fans, this really gives fans something really to look forward to, you know, in watching games, you know, because sometimes, you know, some fans, they watch it just for the enjoyment of it. But a lot of fans, they want to see some of the excitement. They want to see some of the extra curricular. So I think it's a great thing, especially when you have guys like Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr. Really, those two are the only two guys, really, that I can really think of that's going to probably take advantage of this this celebration rule. Because other than that, who else has really been celebrating? You know, I think, you know, you talk about trendsetters or pioneers for the touchdown celebrations. I definitely don't take credit for anything of that nature, but I just tried to do what I could in terms of trying to bring some enjoyment other than just coming and watching, you know, people, you know, run up and down the field, make plays here and there.
We'll get back to you in a moment on that very subject, but what do you think we'll see this season out of Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham Jr. in regards to touchdown celebrations?
Oh, I'm sure those guys, yeah, their wheels are turning. They're coming up with some creative stuff. But it's only going to happen if you get in the end zone. So I expect those guys to get in the end zone quite a bit. And really, you know, that was my motivation for doing the touchdown celebrations when I did it, is because, you know, I couldn't celebrate if I didn't get in the end zone. So I was trying to one-up myself every time that I stepped on the football field.
So when you talk about one-upping yourself every time you stepped on the football field, you had so many celebrations, and people know you for your celebrations, but which one was your personal favorite touchdown celebration?
I think probably the Sharpie or the pom-poms.
Yeah.
I think, you know, those really were the ones that were really impromptu. I had I really didn't have anything planned. When I did the pom-poms, I literally, like I said, at that particular time in the game, it was like one of those rainy games. I think we were playing the Green Bay Packers or something, and I think I was dragging one of the DBs into the end zone. And I was, as I was going into the end zone, I literally was thinking about what to do. And then when I got into the end zone, nothing really came to mind, and I just saw the cheerleaders, and some just told me, T, bring out your inner cheerleader. And I went over to the cheerleaders, I grabbed the pom-poms, and again, yeah, and I did a little thing with the pom-poms, and yeah.
And that was awesome. And where did the Sharpie idea come from? Who gave you that?
That was sort of impromptu. We were playing the Seahawks there in Seattle. The equipment guy, his name is Doc. They call him Doc. Mm-hmm. He was walking by, and literally, I was kind of, I just had that confidence in myself. I'm like, man, I got to score. I got to make a play. And so he walked by me, and you know, the equipment guys, they're always carrying Sharpies to mark out something, black out something, or, yep, you know, they're always writing, you know, keeping notes. And I saw he had one on his hip, and I said, Doc. He said, yeah. I said, let me get the Sharpie. And he's like, so I was like, he's like, here you go. And so he was standing there as if I was going to give it back to him. And I'm like, I said, I'm good. I got it. I'll give it back to you later. But that didn't happen. So I just, the next series we went out, I had a feeling that I was going to score. And that was my thought process behind him. Like, man, if I score, I'm just going to sign the football and, you know, give it to a fan.
It was incredible. You got a Sharpie endorsement deal out of that, did you not?
I did not.
Whoa!
I did not. A lot of people that has witnessed and has seen me do a lot of celebrations, and they see now how, in, you know, a lot of these guys are branding themselves, you know, getting big endorsement deals. I feel like and people have said it, that me and Chad probably were ahead of our time in terms of, yeah, you know, really kind of marketing and branding ourselves. Social media wasn't where it was, where it is right now. So I'm sure had I done that around the time that in the social media boom we are in now,
oh, wow,
I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure I will be, I'll probably be driving a Sharpie vehicle.
Well, you and Chad were huge. I mean, you could not have gotten more popular, but what you're saying is it didn't necessarily translate into being monetized, the fact that you were as popular as you were.
Absolutely. And it was actually the reverse, the adverse of that, Adam, because everybody criticized me. I got criticized more so for doing that than anything. So everything that I did, you know, which I thought was fun, you know, like I said, I was all about fan engagement and really just having fun with the game. I got criticized, whereas now everybody is, you know, smiling upon all those things. And I think it's really funny and how ironic, you know, now they're bringing touchdowns. They're being a little relaxed on the touchdown celebrations when it was, you know, it was frowned upon, you know, some years ago.
All right, Tio, thanks very much. We'll be right back with you. But first, we want to say, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do that. We've noticed some reviews on iTunes. Please keep writing them up, and we'll read some of them on this podcast next week. And in the interim, please subscribe to the Know Them From Adam podcast or leave a review in Apple Podcasts or on the ESPN app. Thanks very much. Now, you are 43 years old today. Do you have any doubts that you could play in the league today if given the opportunity?
Oh, no. Adam, let me tell you something. Yeah. There's no doubt that I could play today. Absolutely. Trust me, I keep myself in shape. Dude, I've played in a number of basketball. I played in a number of basketball leagues with really some skillful guys, some guys that have played in the NBA overseas. Bro, trust me. Everybody sees how athletic and fit that I am. They're like, dude, it's a shame that they as fans feel like I've been blackballed out of the league. But yeah, there's no doubt that I could still contribute in some shape, form, or fashion, to the league and to the game today. There's no question about it. You know, would that be on an every down basis? No, I mean, obviously I'm older. I would have to get myself in, you know, game shape, but you trying to say that somebody of my ability, my caliber, my football IQ, I couldn't come in and play on certain downs and situations and give you something in the red zone? Come on, man. I was a scoring machine. So why wouldn't it? So other than that, they're using my age as a factor for not being able to play. It's not performance based.
Have you been blackballed? In your opinion?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm personally not saying that that's the case.
Yeah.
When I talk to fans and friends that, again, they witness and they see the shape that I'm in, that's what comes to mind, you know, for them, is that I've been blackballed.
So what is the closest you've come to getting another opportunity with a team in recent years? And would you be open, if a team were willing to sign you today, to sign with the team?
I think a couple years ago, I reached out to my former coach, Andy Reid, with the Chiefs.
Yep.
And being that he wasn't, and I think that was the year that he had kind of, I guess, relinquished some of his title of being GM, and he just was primarily the head coach. Again, John Dorsey was the guy.
Yep.
And so I reached out to him, and he asked me, you know, why did I want to play? And I was like, yeah, because I really feel that I have the ability to still play at a high level. Considering how the receivers fared out, you know, the last couple of years, there's no doubt that I could have played. But he basically, I mean, we had a candid conversation, and he basically just said, you know what, let me assess my guys in training camp. Let me see what we got. And we were, you know, very open and candid about it. And he basically just said, let me see what we got, and I'll get back to you. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I continued to work out. And they went through OTAs, mini camp, training camp. And so he did get back to me.
Yep.
And, you know, he basically said, you know, he's like, I'm gonna be honest with you. He's like, you know what's scaring me? And I'm like, I'm thinking, I'm like, what is it? Because of the PR nightmare? That's, you know, the PR aspect of it. He's like, nah. He's like, your age. And I just looked at my phone. I'm like, what? I'm like, are you serious? He goes, yeah. He's like, your age scares me. So other than that, man, that was probably the closest, you know, that I had gotten to even, you know, getting on a team.
And that was 2 years ago, Tio?
Yep, that was about 2 years ago.
And what would you tell teams that were looking today about whether or not you could play in regards to your age and the concerns that Andy Reid expressed to you?
Andy Reid didn't really have any concerns, really. I talked to him, and he was like, yo, if it was up to me, I would give you the benefit of the doubt because he knows me on a personal level.
Yep.
You know, I played in a Pro Bowl. He was a coach there. Obviously, I played a season there. He knows who I am. He knows kind of everything that happened, you know, with that whole fallout with the Eagles. So that wasn't really a concern. But, again, I talked to John, and that was what he said his concern was. In terms of what I could offer or if someone were to give me an opportunity, and that's all it is, an opportunity. Like I said, am I actively seeking trying to get in? No, I'm not. But given the opportunity, I will be able to offer, obviously, like a player-coach type of situation. I can play. I can mentor. I can help coach guys up, especially receivers, allow those guys to learn from me and, you know, become better receivers.
How about a return to San Francisco? They could use some receivers.
Hey, man, like I said, my number is 678-977. Hey, they know how to get a hold of me.
You're going Jimmy Butler on us, T.O. You know, Jimmy Butler did that, and I actually texted him to come on the podcast, and I'm still waiting for a response.
Oh, you still? He must not. He couldn't have given you the right number then.
No, he gave out the right number at his press conference when he was introduced with the Timberwolves. He actually put out his number, and on that day, I actually sent him a text saying I would like him to come on the podcast to talk about his move to Minnesota. And in fact, I told him in the text, I remember when Tom Thibodeau was an ESPN analyst before he went back to coaching in Minnesota, and Tibbs took the job, and I called him, and I'm like, you're going to trade for Jimmy Butler, and he started laughing about trading his pick last year, not this year, last year for Butler, and I knew from his answer that I could tell something was going to go down, and they made a run at Butler last year, and then they got it done this year. But Jimmy advertised the number. He just did what you did. He was ahead of you there. Like, for a guy who's so revolutionary in all these things, the Sharpie and the pom-pom celebrate, he actually beat you on the number there, T.O.
Well, I would have to change my number if I gave my number out, Adam, and I don't want to go through that headache. I would have to give everybody a new number.
Now, recently Warren Sapp said he wants to donate his brain for CTE research. You given any thought to the idea that one day what you would like to do with your brain? I know it's a crazy, morbid type question, but any thoughts on that?
Oh, my God, that is morbid. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's crazy. I'm stumped on that question. I really haven't given too much thought about that.
Okay.
To give my brain to study. I don't know. There's no telling what they may find in this brain of mine.
Did you suffer many concussions during the course of your career in your mind? Do you think you suffered many?
Let me share a funny little tidbit about this. I probably had maybe two, no more than three concussions in my career. Mm-hmm. And I will attribute that to the fact that, honestly, when I was out there on that football field, until I really tapped into my abilities of really knowing that I belonged and I could play with mm-hmm. some of the greatest football players in the league, Adam, I was out there running scared, so I was not trying to be hit by anybody by no means necessary.
Right.
So I will really attribute a lot of my touchdowns to the fact that, number one, I didn't like to get hit. I didn't even really like to get tackled, to be honest.
Yep.
And, you know, and the fact that I had so many touchdown celebrations, that was motivation, too, for me to get into the end zone. And, you know, the less that I got hit,
the better. So, you know, I was out there, you know, running around scared, especially when you got guys like, you know, you got like Sean Taylor, those guys, the safeties, headhunters. You got Ray Lewis. You got guys like Darren Woodson. Those guys, they relished, I guarantee you, weeks leading up to playing us, that I was one of the guys that they needed to stop. And I guarantee you, from a defensive mindset, those guys like, oh, let me lay this guy out. Let me make him afraid to come across the middle. And then he's going to be scared to catch the ball. But with my size, and like I said, once I started to believe who I was and what I could do on the football field, those things really didn't matter because I was just as big as some of those guys. I was, you know, in some guys' eyes, I was almost like linebacker size. And then I started working on, you know, things like my fast twitch muscles to become faster. I worked on my footwork, you know, to become a little bit elusive, evasive at the line of scrimmage. And then when I got in the open field, those are some of the things that I worked on to enhance the skill set that I lacked when I was in high school and college, and really worked on when I got into the league and I progressed.
So, Theo, who was the hardest hitter that you would go against? The one guy you didn't want to get hit when you crossed the middle.
No, I mean, you can get hit by one of the smallest guys, you know. If they catch you the right way, I mean, you can get hurt.
Yeah.
But, you know, guys that were physically imposing, you think about guys like Darren Woodson, you know, guys like Sean Taylor, Ray Lewis, those guys, man, that's what they like to do. They relish the moment to catch a receiver or anybody coming across the middle, you know, not with their head not on the swivel, and lay you out. So I was fortunate and blessed enough not to get hit by Ray. And like I said, when we played the Ravens at our place, that's why I got – when I went into the middle, I got out of that middle as quick as I could.
That was their touchdown celebration, taking somebody down with a big hit, right?
Exactly. And that's why I celebrated for not getting hit.
Let me ask you this question. There's been a lot of controversy surrounding OBJ in New York, contract celebrations. When you look at a young guy like that, if he came to you, what would you say to him about the way he should continue going about his career? I'm sure there's so much knowledge that you could impart to him with everything that you've been through on and off the field.
This is interesting topic because I did talk to OBJ last year, earlier in the year when he was, you know, having some issues with the media. He was frustrated, you know, whether it was with the media, it was coaching, again, with the way he played. He was having some altercations with some of the defensive backs. And early on, he just wasn't having a great year. Mm-hmm. And the media started really to heavily criticize him and really attack him and really speak negative about Odell Beckham Jr. And so I reached out to him on my own. He didn't call me, but I saw what he was about to go through because I had gone through some of those same things. And I basically told him the only way to quiet the critics down, regardless, even if you some of it is warranted, the only way to get them off your back is to go out there and play and let your play do the talking for you. Because the thing is, if you're going out there performing poorly, And on top of what the media is saying, and you're the target, you're the topic every week, there's always something coming out of New York about Odell Beckham Jr. The only way you can stop that or minimize some of the criticism is you go out there and play and ball out. And I think he took some of what I said to heart. I don't take credit for anything because this guy, again, was raised, I'm sure, the right way. He's a God-fearing yep. man. I understand he has parents that raised him the right way. So he's in that aspect of it, he's taken care of. So now he just has to police himself, be the adult, be a professional, be the person, be the football player that he's been blessed to be. And let everything else take care of itself, because that's how I was. Even though I took a lot of criticism, one thing about me is, and I talked about my grandmother earlier. Mm-hmm. My grandmother always told me, be who you're going to be. Be you. Because no matter what, people are going to talk good and they're going to talk bad about you. That doesn't define who you are.
and I've been heavily criticized. I've been unfairly criticized. There's a lot of perception about me, and people are quick to, judge you based on hearsay without even knowing who that individual is. And so I definitely feel that, you know, I was a victim to some of that. But some of the stuff, again, being immature, not doing or saying the right things, I brought on myself. And that's part of the maturation process that I went through, and I'm sure he's going to go through too. I think he's a very smart guy.
What would you like people to know about you, T.O., that they don't know? People have this idea of who you are, this certain perception, but what would be important for them to know about the kind of person and man you are?
I don't need to pat myself on the back, but I mean, I'm a pretty laid back, reserved guy. Outside of the football field, I've surprised a lot of people. It's been shocking at my demeanor, because that's how I am. When I'm on the football field, I'm one way. When I'm off the football field, I'm another way. It's almost literally like a superhero type of situation with me. Like when it's time to go to war, a battle, compete, then I put on that superhero uniform, and you know, that's T.O. But you know, when I'm not trying to save the day, there's no danger. Then I'm just a regular guy. I'm from Alexander City, Alabama, small school, small. Came from a small town. Went to a small college. Just happened to make it big time and really confident in my abilities. Again, there's always going to be doubters, detractors out there, naysayers. But I was number one. The best thing that I could do was believe in myself. But outside of that, you know, I think people that are in my inner circle, they know who I am. Media, that's their job is to at that point in time when we were growing up, it was to sell newspapers. Mm-hmm. But again, this, you know, now the era that we're in, it's all about the wow factor. You think of guys like, you know, Skip Bayless. Sometimes he's baseless. You know what I mean? Skip Baseless, because he'll just say stuff just for the wow factor. And there are people that really, really honor their job as far as the scope of being a journalist. And, you know, I respect those people. But some people, you know, again, they're only going to go by hearsay. Yeah. And, again, I addressed it when we talked about the Hall of Fame stuff. The narrative that they created that I was this locker room the distraction, they could have easily created the narrative that I was nothing but a great guy in the locker room. I can, like I said, I told Skip, I can name two guys to his every one guy that said I was nothing but a great guy. And he's heard those guys say that, but that's not the narrative that he put out there. So that's why I say, again, it's all about who you ask, and it's the media, they have a job to do, and I totally understand that.
But, you know, when you bring up the Hall of Fame, it's not about the kind of guy you were or weren't. It's about your production. You are the only player in NFL history to score a touchdown against all 32 NFL teams. You're the oldest player to have 200 yards from scrimmage in a game at the age of 36. And I always was taught, I was a voter for 6 years. I was taught that if you can't write the history of the game without that player, then he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And I can say, honestly, as any objective person would, you can't write the history of football without you. Your celebrations, all that you brought, all the controversies, all the good, all the bad, all the production, all the teams. You were a part of that football history, right? So you belong in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And by the way, on a separate note, I would just say this. The best thing that you could do, 2 cents to a guy that's going to be my fill-in when we can't get guests, you should never say anything. You should never say anything about that. You let your production speak for itself. You don't have to say anything in the future about any of that, T.O. I'm just telling you right now, okay?
I mean, at this point, man, it's like beating a dead horse. I think at some point, they're going to have to change, they're going to have to change something. They're going to have to, you know, tweak the process, you know, for which guys are supposed to be voted in.
You're going to get in. You're going to get in one day because you belong there,
yes.
Okay? Your production speaks for itself. You'll get in there. It doesn't work on the time schedules the way that people would like. I've been through this with enough other players over time who are so angry and so frustrated and so annoyed, and it's not always fair and it's not always just. But in the end, usually the right thing is done, usually. And when you look at the numbers over time and we see all the production, and it's indisputable. We got 219 games, over 1,000 receptions, almost 16,000 receiving yards, 153 touchdowns. I mean, come on. Come on. Okay? You'll get there. You'll get there, and you shouldn't think about getting there. I'm just telling you that'll happen. But we digress. I digress. I do want to ask you this. Of all the teams that you played, and we talk about San Francisco and Philadelphia and Dallas and Buffalo and Cincinnati and Seattle in 2012 as a practice squad member only, what was your favorite city and organization to play in for?
Probably two. I mean, it's a toss-up between Philly and Dallas. And I say that because, you know, obviously, my skill set, I think what I brought to the table, my value, really my playmaking ability is really what enabled those guys to pull the trigger to bring me to Philly. They saw that I was the added piece, you know, to get into the championship or winning a Super Bowl. It's almost equivalent to what's going on with basketball and free agency. These guys are trying to find, you know, pieces to the puzzle to get them to get them over the hump. You see what Houston just did with Chris Paul, and there's going to be some other surprising, I'm sure, free agency moves. But when I went over to Philly, 2004, man, I knew that it was going to be something special with the way that their defense played. That was number one thing that I thought about when I went there, because I'm like, man, all we got to do is, you know, we just score points. The defense is going to stop guys. I mean, they have been doing it, you know, year in and year out. When I played against the Eagles when I was San Francisco, you know, it was tough to score against those guys. But when I went to the Eagles, you know, it was the weapons that we had from Westbrook, Pinkston, myself, Karell Burkhall, L.J. Smith, Chad Lewis, Donovan McNabb. Man, we had weapons all over the field that could make plays at any given time. And I was just added to the – I mean, I added literally some extra octane to an already stocked situation.
Who goes further this year, by the way, Philadelphia or Dallas, your two former teams? Who has a better year this year?
Oh, man, I think hands down that'll probably be Dallas. I don't think Philadelphia has made enough moves. I don't think the nucleus and the core is there. I think they've had too much going on the last few years that they really just haven't had the nucleus of guys, and they're going to be able to gel together enough to come all together at one time to really compete for that NFC East. It's going to be probably the Giants or the Cowboys that come out of the NFC East. If it's not the Cowboys, my next nod would probably be the Giants.
Could this be Dallas's year finally for a Super Bowl there, T.O.?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I think you look at the way that Prescott played last year. This guy played lights out, rookie of the year. I mean, this there's only a lot of upside to that guy. This guy definitely has played, you know, what I saw with my, you know, visually, the eyeball test, which he passed, he played well beyond his year in the league. So I can only imagine what this guy is going to be in the years to come. He reminds me of a taller version, more seasoned version of a Russell Wilson.
Hmm.
Again, you just put the right, you know, people around him. Dez Bryant, you know, be the playmaker that he was a couple of years ago, and he gets some other added pieces. Good tight end, and you know, they really got a defensively. They stopped some people. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. They can definitely contend for the Super Bowl this year.
Very interesting. All right, the last thing that we like to do on this podcast, Theo, is something called Last Call. And I ask you three questions, and I get a few answers from you here. And the first question, that last call, is the last time that you cried.
Oh, last time I cried? Oh, man. That's a good question. Last time I cried, oh, man. It's been a while, man.
Yeah.
I always get emotional. I actually, you know what? I, I, it,
I got teary eyed. I just found out last night that my grandmother's brother, he just passed. I know this is probably a downer. You know, put a damper on your last call. But yeah, my grandmother's brother just passed last night, and my mom, you know, texted me, and she told me, and instantly I thought about my grandmother. And so, you know, he was going probably through some of the same things that my grandmother did. They both, you know, they didn't have any resolve, or they couldn't find their mother over the years. And so I think that's what really bothered them a lot, and they spent some years trying to find their mom and never could. And so there were times that, you know, he had, I think, some early stages of dementia, and so my grandmother eventually passed from Alzheimer's. But those were some of the things that she used to bring up just out of the blue, is that, you know, she wanted to find her mom and whatever. They made some efforts some years back when I was in college, but were never ever able to do it. But other than that, that was probably last night I got teary eyed.
If you were going to have one more meal on the face of this earth, and I'm sorry to go morbid on you again, but if you were going to have one more meal on the face of this earth, what would it be and where would it be?
Oh, what? Probably Death Note. Man, this is an easy one.
Yeah.
My mom's collard greens and cornbread and pinto beans.
That good, huh?
What?
That good.
Oh, my gosh. She makes that cornbread just right. I think she adds some sugar or something in it to where it's not super, super sweet, but it has a little sweet flavor to it. And, you know, mixed with the collard greens with that salt. Oh my gosh, man! This is the bomb.
I wish she'd open a little cafe instead of becoming a seamstress.
Yeah, she probably could if she wanted to. Though that cornbread and collard greens and those pinto beans or butter beans. Oh man!
And if you're gonna have
me talk, just enunciating those things makes me sound country. Butter beans and collard greens and cornbread.
And if you can have four people at that last meal, any four people, alive or dead, who are the four people you bring into that dinner?
Oh, man. I would probably say my grandmother. I would say Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, and you know what? I'll put Barack Obama.
Oh, I'd love that one too. That'd be great, right? That's a pretty good force in there, T.O., right there.
Oh yeah.
That's a foursome. But you know what? Here's the deal. We got a great twosome here. T.O., I appreciate your time as always. Thank you very much. Continued success to you. I appreciate you coming back on here on the podcast.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, T.O. Take care.